Sync with Arthur Askey, Ted Ray, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And team, listen carefully, because here's a question put to you by Mrs. Anne Regan.
How would members of the team get on if they took part in the Brain of Britain contest?
How would members of the team get on if they took part in the Brain of Britain contest?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was asked to join this team, and I had half a mind to accept, but half a mind is no good.
That's very clever.
I wish I knew what it meant.
I am...
Mrs. Ted.
No, Arthur,
no,
please.
No, you're the old one. You...
As a matter of fact, I'm not.
Who is?
You are.
Oh, you beast. I don't look it, do I?
You're the youngest. You're the youngest, and besides, it's alphabetical order, isn't it?
Alphabetical order.
Yes, go on.
Team, could we get back to the question?
Now, I was just going to say that, obviously, Mrs. Regan, through her question here, thinks that we haven't got a chance of doing it. We were all very well educated, you know, Mrs. Regan.
Really?
I mean, you take Jimmy here. He was at Cambridge. He's an M.A.
That's right.
Mainly alcoholic. Ted went to the Wigan Technical College. And he was an M.G., Master of Gags. And then Siddle went to the Finchley High School for the Sons of Gentlemen. He was a Moo. Master of Odd Odes. Is that right?
Yeah, lovely.
You're very good.
How am I doing? All right.
You're doing very well.
And there's me, DDT.
What was that?
Duck's Disease Tremens.
I should have thought you were AA, Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's right, could have been.
In a brain's trust, Arthur would be able to keep his head above water because wood floats.
That would rather go against the grain.
Team, I would like to ask you whether you think you'd be any good at any sort of quiz, even does the team think?
Well, you should.
No, that's very nice.
Good.
That's
I would be charming. Very good because I come from a very intelligent family. Intelligence reigns supreme in my family, but I was born in a dry spell.
Thank you, Mrs. Regan, and thank you very much, team, for trying to answer her question. Thank you, Mrs. Regan. Team, now our question is going to be put to you by Mr. Bertie Jukes.
Dentists sometimes make appliances and extensions for people. What appliance or extension could each member of the team suggest for the other three?
Dentists sometimes make appliances and extensions for people. What appliances or extensions could each member of the team suggest for the other three?
But Mr. Jukes... we'd like a little more explanation about this extension.
Are you a dentist?
Do you want to
Mr.
name
Jukes?
A few? I'm a student, in fact.
Ah, I see. Well,
student? He's not a student. You know, I've been a student for 25 years, by the way.
Jim, all sorts of people can lose their hair at a very early age.
I know, but
Mr. Jukes, mind turning
you
away?
You should have bought an extension.
Toupee or not toupee?
I went to see my dentist the other day, and he told me my teeth are perfect. But my gums have to come out. Rather unfortunate.
My teeth are all my own. I can show you the receipt.
I went to see my dentist the other day, but he couldn't find them. He had to have his eyes examined.
Jimmy, at Margate last year, there was a man rushing up and down the beach, and he was crying and shouting, and I said, what's the matter with you? He said, I've lost a piece of toffee. I said, well, what are you crying like that for? He said, my teeth are in it.
Jimmy... I'd like to hear from you.
Well, and so would everybody. The entire nation is waiting. I'm as nonplussed as Ted is about this because he's used a couple of expressions that I didn't know applied to dentistry. Appliances and extensions.
Mr. Jukes, you've been asked a question. Did you understand it?
I think so, and I'll give a genuine example.
Right.
You can have an appliance to fit to your teeth to stop you grinding at night.
Well, I know a fellow who's got so many gold teeth, he sleeps with his head in the safe.
And I know a fellow whose teeth are so bad, if he had one white tooth, he'd have a snooker set. My wife has two teeth, one above the other. She has her own central eating.
I saw a dentist's grave, and the epitaph on it said, filling in my last cavity.
When I went to the dentist and came back, they said, how did you get on? And I said, I was bored to tears.
What is a dentistric extension?
Dentistric?
Spit in ear.
I'll give you a serious example. If you've got some teeth and you've got a denture...
You can't tell with Jim. He has got some, you can't tell.
Well, he sounds like a Spanish dancer with a set of maracas to me.
What a mercy
you know,
nobody
there, had. There was that. This young lady went across to the dentist and she was terrified. She went in, she'd never been in the dentist before, and she went in and she got there and she said to the dentist, "Oh, dear." And he said, "Don't cry, dear." He said, "It's all painless now, we're all right now." She said, "Oh, I don't want to have a tooth out. I think I'd rather have a baby." He said, "Well, make up your mind and I'll adjust the chair."
And I overheard a dentist changing the tire of his car. And as he went to move the nuts of the... He said, "This may hurt a little."
I am the oldest on the panel. And dentistry, when I was young, was very primitive. And the first dentist I went to, he used to have his assistant stick a pin in the patient's behind just as he drew the tooth, you see. And he was doing this to a fellow once. And he pulled the tooth out and the assistant stuck the pin in his behind. And he said, "Is that all right?" He said, "Yes, but I didn't know the roots went down that far."
Tim, have you heard an appliance?
I was in pantomime years ago. We had a rather elderly lady playing the witch. And she came on the centre stage and she had to say, "Hold!" to the merrymaking. And as she said, "Hold," on the opening night, the top set fell out, right in the centre of the stage. And the girls, instead of doing the routine they should have done, had to dance around them like a maypole.
Well, I once went through the kitchen of a hotel, and I'm always very particular where I eat. I always insist on going in the kitchen. And there was a fella there, and this is true, with a top set of choppers, and he was doing the edges round the mince pies. How about that?
Personally, I'd like to have more teeth, if that could be arranged. I don't know whether there's room...
You mean you want three?
I would like to masticate more than I do. I was told by somebody that you should chew everything that you eat, 33 mastications. Do you know that?
Yeah, have you tried that with a baked bean?
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Mr. Jukes. Thank you very much indeed. And now, team, you're going to welcome, I hope, Mrs. Marion Merrick. Mrs. Merrick, welcome to the programme. Can we have your question, please?
Have the team ever experienced a ghastly catastrophe and been told, "Never mind, you'll laugh about this in years to come," and did they?
Have the team ever experienced a ghastly catastrophe and have been told, "Never mind, you'll laugh about this in years to come"?
Yes, the manager...
Wait a minute. And did they?
The manager of the Empire Sunderland said that to me after one of my gags. I never forgot it, and he was right. They did. I went back 20 years later, and they laughed.
Because I was there the previous week, Ted.
Do you want to hear the joke?
Yes, I do.
It was a wonderful joke.
Yes. What was the joke, Ted?
I said, "I've got a goat with no nose." Mm. And yes. The conductor said to me, "How does he smell?" And I said, "Terrible." And they never laughed. I think there must be a trip in from Sunderland tonight.
That was the gag, Ted, that Dickie Murdoch and I in Bandwagon decided we'd have a goat up in our flat. Do you remember that, anybody?
Yes.
We had a goat called Lewis, and that was the gag that loaded us for the whole series, trying to get that gag in.
You know, when I was at school, I went to a school that was half Catholic and half Jewish. It was called St. Cohen's. And there was a boy in the woodwork class, and he really was thick. This boy, and I really mean thick. Well, he was due for the cane, so I told him, I said, "You get a piece of tin down your bags, see, right inside, and then it won't hurt." And he was so thick, he did it. He got this piece of tin down his trousers and went upstairs, and all the kids went home because they thought the bell went. It says here.
Jimmy Edwards.
Well, the only catastrophe that's ever occurred to me was the last question.
What are you going to call this
And one? I never found out what an extension to your teeth is. My teeth are long enough already.
Well,
I'd
we'll
like
leave.
To have that bald fella back, actually.
We'll
get him to elucidate about the extensions to my teeth. I will not be interrupted, Mr. Chairman.
You will?
It's my show.
Oh, is it?
Are you asking about a natural catastrophe?
Well, let's find out from Mrs. Merrick. Mrs. Merrick, why did you ask this question? Are you prone to disaster yourself, and have you had this sort
she
of
looks
experience?
As though she would be.
She's very attractive.
Give her a chance.
She's a very attractive lady.
Quiet, yes. Team.
Well, I've never had this happen, but I've said this to other people that have had catastrophes happen to them, but never have anything...
What, you'll laugh after? That's the stupidest thing anybody can say. Just after both your legs have dropped off. And someone says you'll laugh about it later. You could never laugh about that.
Well, you couldn't pull the leg anymore, could you?
I mean, I just think that anybody who says anything like that wants the head examined if it hasn't already fallen off.
Well, there was a bit of a catastrophe in our church last Sunday. We've got a new vicar, and he got up in the pulpit and he said, "My text for today will be, I shall come down and dwell among you. I shall come down and dwell among you. I shall come down and dwell among you." And he got very excited and fell out of the pulpit. Into the lap of an old lady sitting in the front pew.
Yes.
And he got up and spread himself out, started to apologise. And she said, "Oh, don't apologise, Vicar. After all, you did warn us you were coming."
You know, when you talk about the seriousness of things and laughing about it later, there's an absolutely true story about the burial of Harry Tate, a great comedian. And standing there amongst the mourners were Charlie Austin and Charles Coben. And Charlie Austin said, "There he goes." And poor old Coben said, "Yes, there he goes." And Austin said, "We'll never see the like of him again." He said, "No, we'll never see the like of him again." He repeated everything, you see. And Charlie Austin said, "Here, how old are you, Charlie?" So Coben said, "I'm 92. He said, "Blimey, it's hardly worth your while going home, is it?"
I mean, one of the most desperate things that can happen to anyone is summed up in the words of W.C. Fields, who said, "Who has not heard the crash of a treasured bottle?" And the most disastrous thing that happened to me in that, I mean, I can remember once coming back from abroad, and you know you've always been compelled for some reason to buy duty-free scotch or whatever. Miles away in some lousy, stinking aerodrome full of people who don't know. Anyway, you buy these two bottles and you carry it in some awful plastic carrier to the aeroplane, and you stick it under the seat and warm it up, and then you get out at London Airport and you walk 3/4 of a mile at 7 a.m. feeling absolutely putrid.
And he's only going and to the just, other man.
And just at the after the first 3/4 of a mile walk along those lovely alleys, you just put it down for a breather, bang, and you see that trickle.
Can't you wait? When do you get there?
This is
Mrs. Trickle. Trickle at your age, it wouldn't be.
Mrs. Merrick.
It's another extension.
Talking of a trickle, there was this chap who drank some sulfuric acid by mistake. And you may consider that was a catastrophe, but nothing really happened, except that when he blew his nose, he got terrible little yellow holes in his handkerchief.
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you very much, Mrs. Merrick. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, one of the country's top impressionists and comedians who will make the team think that they're talking to themselves. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Goodright. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you, thank you.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
And what is your question, please?
Question. Are the team radio and TV fans, and which voices give them the most pleasure?
Are the team's radio and TV fans, and which voices give them the most pleasure?
The voice that gives me the most pleasure is my own when I'm getting a fee.
I like the answer.
Well, I love impersonators, and I think we've got some marvellous ones. But I think that Peter is the best of the lot of them, and I'll tell you why.
Tell us why.
Because he takes me off.
Jimmy Edwards.
I must confess that I've been out of the country some time, ladies and gentlemen. And
I'm to public demand.
I love him. I kill him.
Everyone a little, Jeff.
I've forgotten what I was going to say, really. Only the thing is, you see, I listen to the radio out of force majeure, because unfortunately in most of the hotels that I go in, when you try and get the bedside light on, the blasted radio comes on.
And you must admit, though, Jim,
and you get some idiot telling you what the weather's going to be like, and how do you... Who cares what the weather's going to be like when you're in bed all day?
Peter, talking about weather, could you possibly do the weather forecast in the voices that you think were represented by the four gentlemen in front of you?
The weather forecast?
The weather forecast, yes.
Well, winds, Cyril would probably say, winds were light to variable, shortly decreasing. I shouldn't be at all surprised.
I like it. That was and the little chap next to him, Arthur Ashe.
Hello, playmates. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it didn't rain tomorrow, because my comms are very chilly tonight, I tell you.
And
what about Jimmy?
Ted Ray. What about Jimmy, you said?
Oh, he's going to do me, is he?
Oh, he's going to do you.
Oh, thanks. Very
Again, by public demand.
Very severely. Yeah. Peter Goodright, what'd you do, Ted Ray, very severely?
My Uncle Ruby went to the doctor's. He said, my wooden leg is giving me a lot of pain. The doctor said, how can your wooden leg give you a lot of pain? He said, my wife keeps hitting me over the head with it. How about that?
How about that?
How about that? And the man who hatched up this nauseating idea, Jimmy Edwards.
I can't do Jimmy Edwards.
We'd love to.
Have you got a voice of your own?
Yes, I have, and it sounds like that.
Well, no. All I can say is no wonder you keep changing it.
This programme has run for a number of years now, and every now and again, members of the team get up and, you know, they give an impression. Now we've got the master here, Peter Goodright. Peter, I'm going to ask the team to impersonate just someone, yes, and let's see if we can guess who it is. Cyril, give us an impression.
Well, I don't really give impressions of people. I give impressions of animals.
Right.
Give an impression. You're doing a very good one now, of an owl.
I thought that was a Boyd. And this is going to be a
yes, and Peter
Goodright
will
impression.
Tell you whether
yes,
it's good.
It's a duck. Yes, I better tell you what it is before.
No,
I know it.
Yes, Donald
that helps,
Duck.
You see.
Donald Duck?
No, not Donald Duck, just a duck.
Just quack, carry on.
Quack, 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 quack.
Cyril Fletcher, that's very nice. Cyril, Peter Goodright.
What did Duck do during the last bit?
Peter Goodright will give you.
It was badly.
Peter Goodright will give. Peter Goodright will give you some points in a minute. Arthur Askey.
You want me to do what?
I want you to do
well. Now, this is very tricky, because I always say that I am perhaps the most versatile and talented artist in this country. But the one thing I cannot do is impressions. And I only wish I could, because I adore them. But see if you can guess who this is. Good evening, England. This is Gilly Potter speaking to you in English. Well, did he get it?
He looks very like his father.
Jimmy Edwards.
Rob Wilton.
Yes, yes. Horace Mashford.
Here we are. Guess who this is?
Yes.
And name the film and the year it was made. Cast adrift in an open boat.
That's the barkeeper.
Shut up. 2,000 miles from the nearest land.
Come in, number 9.
You'll hear from me, Mr. You'll hang from the highest yard in the British Navy.
Thank you,
2,000
Jimmy Edwards.
I'm going home. I'm not going to.
Jimmy Edwards, don't ring us. We'll ring
it?
You.
Who was it?
Ted Ray.
No, he wasn't. Ted Ray.
Wait a minute, Ted Ray.
Tell me who he was.
Jack Benny, a wonderful comedian, one of the greatest men I ever saw. The whole reason people say to me, Jack, look at here. Why do you wear glasses? And I said, well, I'll tell you. You see, it's cheaper than buying a dog.
Peter Goodright, can we have your votes, please?
Well,
I think Cyril's duck was excellent.
Was it? Was very good, yes.
10 marks for that.
Yes, 10 marks
very
for that.
Good,
out of what?
Oh,
pardon? Out of what?
Out of 10.
Right, Arthur Askey.
Yes, Arthur. Arthur's impression was unbelievably splendid, too. I think that should have 10 marks.
Jimmy Edwards.
Only 10 for that.
Yeah, only 10.
Jimmy Edwards should be deported.
Jim.
I've got a better one. No. I've got a Lionel Barrymore you might like.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Who was Lionel Barrymore?
He used to say, "You can't take it with you, boy."
That's very good. Thank you very much, and thank you, Peter Goodright.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And team now, Mrs. Raylene Green. Mrs. Raylene Green, welcome to the programme. A question, please.
If members of the team were ghosts, whom would they most like to haunt and how would they go about it?
If members of the team were ghosts, who would they like to haunt and how would they go about it?
I think they're horrible things and they smell.
What?
Goats.
No.
Oh, goats!
Oh, sorry. Jimmy knows more about spirits than ghosts.
I'd like to haunt the income tax man. As a matter
of fact. Oh, great. I'll join you in that.
I would really like to come up behind me and go...
How would you go to him? Go on, Jim.
Who was that Lionel Barrymore?
For years and years, I had this dreadful feeling...
Yes, Cyril.
...that I was being followed.
Yes, Cyril.
And do you know what it was?
No, Betty. Cyril.
No, it was my vest creeping up on me.
No, do you remember, Mac, we're talking about ghosts. Years ago, you and I did a programme at Madame Tussauds.
Oh, indeed.
When they put my effigy in there, my figure.
That's right.
And the launching of it, we had quite a do, didn't we? With the
we did.
Showing about how it's made.
Well, this one moment we came to the point where they put the eyeballs in the... Aye, and Arthur walked up and picked one up and put it in his mouth and said, "Oh, God, soft centre."
And we had to do the Chamber of Horrors late at night when all the customers had gone.
Oh, that was nice.
And I was sitting downstairs about midnight and the crew all broke, went to have something to drink or eat. Yes. And I was sitting in the bath at Smith. Had murdered his wives in. And it was a frightening experience. I felt really ghostly that night.
It really
there was.
Was
a little pub, you know, in a little village, and there was supposed to be a place that was haunted. It had been closed for years, and they'd bet, the landlord had bet anybody that they wouldn't spend a night in this place for 20 quid and spend the whole night. And one fellow was rather in his cups, you see. He said, I'll do it. Don't worry. So he went to this castle, and he found a bedroom, and he was so drunk he went to sleep. And suddenly he heard a ghostly voice saying, "There's only thee and me. There's only thee and me." He said, "If I can get these bloody trousers on, there'll only be thee."
Thank you, Tim, very much, and thank you, Mrs. Raylene Green. And our team, Mrs. Joan G, is here. Mrs. G, may we have your question, please?
Does the team think a husband should tell the truth when a wife asks his opinion of her new hat?
Does the team think a husband should tell the truth when a wife asks her opinion about a new hat?
Now, Mrs. Yes. G, you are really old-fashioned. Now, there's very few ladies wear hats these days, do they? How many have we got in the audience? How many ladies are wearing hats in the
very
audience?
Very few.
We've got about 2,000 people here. And there's only about 5 of them who are wearing hats. There's one lady over there. She's more up to date. She's wearing a see-through blouse. Oh, no, it's 2 bald-headed men sitting together. I beg your pardon.
I think probably she's referring to maybe special occasions when ladies wear...
Oh, funerals and weddings.
Well, yes.
I think it's terribly, terribly dangerous... For a man to give his opinion about his wife's hat. In fact, I think it's very foolish for a lady to say, you know, "Darling, what do you think of this hat?" Because, you know, it's terrifying. What do you do? You either say, you lie and you say it's horrible, or you say, "Darling, it's marvellous. You've never looked lovelier. But put the rest of your clothes on first."
It's very embarrassing, isn't it, to go into a woman's shop, you see, with your wife, and then she tries these hats on, and you have to approve of them, or you don't have to approve of them. And the assistants, I think, are so rude. Betty once said, "I'd like to see something cheap in a straw hat." And the woman said, "Take this one. The mirror's over there."
But, I mean, you see, women are so... So what is the word... I mean, equivocal, I think is the word. They don't want, they ask a question, but they don't want an honest answer. That's
right.
What's so irritating about women.
Yeah.
They ask if you like that awful thing on their head, and you say it looks like as though a cat.
Depends how long you've been married, Jim.
Well, I'm speaking as a
hat hater.
No, a single man.
Can you imagine that woman who turns up at Ascot every year? She wears this huge hat. Well, if I was a husband, I wouldn't give her an opinion. I'd get a divorce.
Well, you know, I was sitting behind a lady with a hat similar to the one Arthur's talking about, and I couldn't see the film. And I think this
couldn't
is the reason...
What?
Couldn't see the film, the screen, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, madam, I said, really, I can't see the film. She said, "You're not missing much." I said, "No, that's not fair." I said, "Please, madam, will you remove that hat or I'll report you to the manager?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, I want to see this comedy." She said, "Well, watch my back and laugh when I do."
It's like the woman who was running down the street in the pouring rain and she had her skirt up over her head, you see. And the fellow went up to him and said, "Madam, you're showing all your legs." She said, "Well, I've had my legs for 40 years, but my hat's a new one."
About chaps with hats. I mean, I wear it says if you want to get ahead, wear a hat, it says, or something. I wear a hat from time to time when
don't
it's
you
raining.
Take it off in bed? Because of the woodpeckers?
As a matter of fact, he wears a hat with extensions to cover up his moustache.
Thank you very much, and there I'm afraid we must close. Does the team think for today? On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Arthur Askey, Ted Ray, and Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners, and, of course, our special guest, Peter Goodwright. This is McDonald Hope, saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.